the left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get to it. Happy Friday! It is Friday, October 25th. This hour of Flames Talk underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg on a Friday, October 25th in the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Vix. Happy Friday, brother.
I am so curious to find out where the next hour takes us because you have some sort of energy right now.
Got a little bit of edge today.
A little bit.
Let's go. Got El Clasico on Saturday. We got all kind of fired up. Let's rock. Hey, it had to happen at some point, right? First loss of the season had to happen at some point. And now is when I think things really get interesting for this group. Because now the tests get really tough, right? Winnipeg on Saturday, unbeaten. Carolina, they just lost two on Thursday. Winnipeg 7-0-0. Then Vegas on Monday. We know how much difficulty the Flames have had playing in that building. Then Utah. Utah's been a pretty tough test so far this year. Then New Jersey and Jacob Markstrom in here a week from today on November 1st. This is when things get real interesting for the Calgary Flames. That in a second. We got lots to get to this hour. Daily Flames Roundtable later on this hour as well. But we'll start with kind of the news of Friday, where the Flames have sent Matt Coronato to the AHL Wranglers. We'll just touch on this quickly, and we'll hit on it much more in depth coming up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But look, here's what's going on. One of Sharon Govich or Hanzik is ready to return for Calgary. Both guys on injured reserve as we're talking right now. But, you know, pretty safe bet one of Yegor Sharangovich or Sam Hanzek ready to get back into action, which means Coronato was going to be bumped back into that fourth line platoon role that we had seen from him before. And they need him playing, Vix. Like that, that is the biggest thing here from a Flame standpoint. I think the organization looked at it like if he's going to be moved down the depth chart, and if he's going to go from, you know, playing top or middle 6 minutes to back being in that fourth line platoon role, well, it's better for him at this stage to be playing in the American League, to be playing 20 minutes a night with the Wranglers. They need him getting big minutes. It's not on the NHL team right now. I don't believe this is a performance standpoint because performance-wise, on merit, I think Coronado's been very good. And I have come away from the start of this season where Coronado's played 5 of the 7 games. I've come away feeling that the NHL is clearly where he belongs. I think that he has really taken a step forward in being an NHLer. So this is less of a performance thing because I don't think it is, and it's more of a he needs to play assignment, and that's where I think things are coming from on the Coronado front. And I know that frustrates some people. I understand, but if the coaching staff was looking at it and was going to move him into that spot where he wasn't going to be playing a big minutes or sometimes was going to find himself in the press box, I think that, you know, as the org, you say, all right, for the time being, let's play some big minutes in the American League. I don't think I can fully understand if Coronado is frustrated by it because you want to play in the NHL and you believe you play and belong in the NHL. And I think that he'd be fully justified. But that's kind of the situation the Flames find themselves in with Sharangovich and Hanzek knocking on the door. You can only have 23 on the active roster. That's what I think we're talking about. And I don't think it'll hurt him playing in the American League. I don't think it'll hurt him going down there and continuing to be strong there. And then let's see how long it is until he's back up with the Flames.
Yeah, my first thought would be to see how he reacts when he does arrive with the Wranglers. You can take a demotion one of two ways. You can sit and pout, or you can go dominate that league until you get to a point where you've basically forced the boss's hand to recall you. But this doesn't necessarily come as some surprise. And I know we've talked about it a little bit on past episodes of Flames Talk, where what happens to this roster if and when Sharangovich and Hanzik are back healthy? Because as you mentioned, you can only carry 23. There's only so many bodies you can have around. How do the Calgary Flames navigate one or both of those players returning, assuming that everybody else is healthy? Well, one of the options is to demote somebody who doesn't need to clear waivers. So that would be Coronado. That would be Klapka. That would be Hanzik. Kirkland falls into that, but I don't think Kirkland has done anything whatsoever to warrant any discussion about going back to the American Hockey League, at least at this junction. So suddenly your options are a little bit more limited, and I can already feel the text line ramping up at 960-960 going, well, why not put Hanley on waivers? But that doesn't help your situation with Coronado and Klapka, as you mentioned, potentially platooning on the fourth line. So now you've got...
Yeah, it helps. It keeps you with the roster.
It keeps you the roster-wise, you're fine, but not lineup-wise.
But not lineup-wise, yeah. Because then Coronado's only playing every second game if it's a platoon situation, like you said. And now he's down to around the 10, 11-minute mark, which doesn't necessarily help facilitate development in his game. So instead, you option him down to the American Hockey League. You still have that team in your city. They're still in your arena, and you're able to accommodate some development time in terms of, all right, you're going to go down there, but we're going to play the wheels off you. You're going to end up playing 18 to 22 minutes a night in high leverage situations on special teams. And we want you to go down there, and you, it's fine to be pissed off about it. Absolutely. In fact, if you're not, that would probably be more of a concern than, you know, the alternative, but use that the right way, channel it the right way, and basically do what you did in the American Hockey League last season, but maybe up a notch. And it won't be long until he's back with the Calgary Flames.
Text line's open at 960-960. Last thing I'll say on the Coronado front before we hit it again later this hour on the Daily Flames Roundtable, but I hope he's pissed off. I hope that because on this front, I think it was in the Dome over on Twitter responded to me on this a little earlier. And just the where Coronado sits in a lot of the individual and on-ice metrics, which... Absolutely. He's been very strong. This to me is not an on merit situation as much as it's who doesn't need waivers and who needs the playing time the most. And that's what I think this decision is based on. And so I hope Coronado's upset. I hope that Coronado is like, hey, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to prove it that you're going to have to call me right back up, because that's what I think you want in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think Coronado in the five games he's played has been quite strong and has held his own. And I think on merit, if the roster space is there, he should be in the NHL right now with Sharon Govich or Hanzek ready to return. I think especially if it's Sharon Govich, I think him being first line on the American League makes more sense than fourth line in the NHL. And honestly, I think that there have been some guys that Coronado's been more impactful than in the last three or four games, but the nature of contracts and the nature of chair time and playing time and waiver eligibility
and sample size, to be perfectly honest with you, because Coronado's sample size is a lot smaller than perhaps some of the veterans that he's outplayed to this point. But yeah, I'll agree. Matt Coronado, to me, has looked like an NHLer, but this is the benefit or the other side of the double-edged sword, where you have an internal competition of 13 or 14 or 15 forwards vying for 12 spots every night to play. Matt Coronado becomes a victim somewhat of a numbers game where, A, he doesn't have to clear, as you mentioned, and B, he's much better playing big minutes than playing minimal minutes every second or third game.
And I think age-wise, role-wise, all that type of stuff, it probably makes more sense for a guy like Klapka to platoon in that, because that's probably what his role is going to be closer to what his role is going to be in the NHL, as opposed to Coronado, who probably, if he makes it the way that the Flames hope he ends up turning into in the NHL, he's going to be a top six or middle six winger that can give you some scoring. So him being in that platoon fourth line role where sometimes you're sitting in the press box makes less sense for a guy like Coronado, who projects to be a higher up depth chart player long term compared to Klapka. And that's not even a knock on Klapka, but Klapka probably projects more as a bottom six right wing. And so him being in that platoon fourth line role is closer to maybe what his ceiling is compared to the ceiling for Coronado.
I think that's fair. The one caveat I'll put on it is the amount of development Adam Klapka has managed to execute over the course of the past couple of seasons makes me a little fuzzy on what his actual ceiling is, because from where he was 2 years ago to where he is now. But I like you, Pat, see him at the peak of his career being a bottom six winger, and that's where he happens to slot into as it stands right now. So it makes sense that, okay, maybe you look at him and go, maybe he's only got 10 or 15%, and that's an arbitrary number, of development growth remaining, whereas perhaps you look at Matt Coronato and see a greater number. So you want to make sure that Coronato isn't stunted by lack of playing time and lack of ice time.
More on this as we hit the Daily Flames roundtable later this hour. It's Flames Talk with Steinberg and Vickers on a Friday. So now that they're getting a little healthier and they're going to get somebody back, you can imagine whether it's Saturday or Monday in Vegas, it's all about how they respond to their first regulation loss against Carolina on Thursday night. And that response is going to come during a real measuring stick stretch for the Flames. This is a big-time measuring stick stretch for the Flames early on in the year. So can Ryan Lomberg and the Flames avoid snowballing in the wrong direction? I asked him about that Friday after practice.
It's all about playing the right way. I mean, you know, obviously you want to win every game. But you're going to lose games. It's just, you know, fact of matter, you're going to lose games. It's about playing the right way. So if we play an amazing game, full 60, the right way, and we lose, we can wake up the next morning and feel good about ourselves. So it's, especially this time of year, it's about dialing in our game and making sure we're doing the right things. And, you know, later on in the year, that's when the results will start to, you know, steamroll and snowball and, you know, they'll start to string some wins together and you know, on the opposite side, we'll kind of cut off those losses.
So that's the mindset of the Flames, is that, hey, it's just got to go back to playing the right way, which they did for stretches against Carolina. But man, you talk about Carolina, where they sustained their first regulation loss, then the unbeaten Winnipeg Jets, the number one team in the NHL early on. Then you go into Vegas, into Utah, and home against New Jersey. Like, that's a pretty gauntlet-looking five-game stretch in late October, early November. So I'm really interested to see what we see from Calgary in this stretch, because, you know, the last few years, after getting off to decent starts, then a big losing streak has hit them. 2 years ago, when they start 5-1-0, then they hit that big losing skid. Last year, I think they started 2-1-1, then they hit a big losing skid. Well, this year they start 5-0-1. You want to avoid that big losing skid. And so what can you do in a real gauntlet-looking stretch? I think we'll find out a little bit more, or even a lot more, about what this group is all about and what type of team this is here in the next 3-4 games.
Yeah, and for me, the start of that discovery phase, if you will, for the Calgary Flames was Thursday night against the Carolina Hurricanes, because you mentioned it, Carolina, Winnipeg at home, you hit the road for Vegas. And how does this team react when the pendulum swings the other way? Well, it swung a little bit against the Carolina Hurricanes. Listen, the Calgary Flames weren't going to play at a 917 points percentage over an 82-game schedule. They weren't going to go undefeated in regulation over the course of 6 or 7 months. But how you react afterwards, and to be perfectly honest, in game, I thought they reacted well. They went down 3-0 in that game and they didn't fold. Some of that, to a degree, is Carolina having a 3-0 lead, and typically you'll see the team that holds the edge sag a little bit or maybe go defensive a little bit. But I was in the Carolina room post game, and I know they weren't happy with their last 30 minutes in that game. And a lot of it was things that they couldn't react to because of the way the Calgary Flames were playing. That's in the past. That's in the rear view now. And the Calgary Flames enter action Saturday against the best team in the NHL, not necessarily on a losing streak, but on a losing note. So how does this group react? Mm-hmm. Not that this is major adversity early in the season. We're talking about one loss and then looking forward to the next game, which happens to be a team that is undefeated in regulation itself, just straight up undefeated at 7-0. How do you react? How do you respond? And if that one doesn't go your way, whether you follow the process, you execute the game plan and just don't come out on top, or you don't do those things and you don't do the little details and you don't come out on top, what happens when this team, it's a matter of when, it's not a matter of if, every single team, all 32 teams in the NHL will lose consecutive games at some point this season, mark my words. But if this turns into a 2-game and then you go into Vegas, how does this team react when suddenly the wins aren't coming? The process might be there, but the execution isn't. and those immaculate vibes we've talked about start to fade a little bit, that'll be the true measure for me of how the Calgary Flames are as a team, is how they react to negative situations, because we've basically only seen positive up to this point.
What do we make of a 4-2 loss against Carolina? The first kind of, you know, and not to say that the, because I still look at the Oilers win in Edmonton as kind of their best 60-minute game all year long. And so I don't want to take that away from them as a measuring stick. But, I mean, the Oilers are a little discombobulated. I guess you could probably you could probably look at that as a measuring stick, too. But no question Carolina was.
Yeah.
And they came in and they overwhelmed the Flames for, I want to say, I don't know, 15 consecutive minutes from about the five-minute mark, maybe a little bit more, say 20 consecutive minutes. They overwhelmed the Flames from 5 minutes into the first period to about 5 minutes into the second period. It was just the Flames had a real tough time dealing with Carolina's pressure,
speed,
their pursuit, their speed, their pace. I mean, the way that they close on players and the way that they initiate one-on-one battles, as Kevin Rooney told us in the first intermission on Thursday night, like it's 5 one-on-one battles all over the ice. And that's Carolina does it everywhere. And they the minute a faceoff is lost, their guys are immediately on you, and it carries on defensive zone. They do it as they're forechecking and attacking in the offensive zone through the neutral zone. I mean, the way that they pursue and the way that they pressure is kind of unlike a lot of other teams in the NHL. Not so much like the X's and O's, but the personnel on top of the X's and O's. Nobody does it quite like Carolina does, because they've got that speed and they employ that system under Rod Brind'Amour. So it took a little while for Calgary to adjust to it, and unfortunately in that adjustment period they spotted him 3 goals, and against a team like that, it's going to, and Kochetkov looked like he was pretty dialed in, just going to be tough to come all the way back. And yet, you give the Flames a lot of credit, because the one thing that remained constant against Carolina was that they did not skirt the work. Even though they got overwhelmed and the execution waned and they spotted the Hurricanes 3 goals, it wasn't due to laziness. It wasn't due to lack of effort. It was just they got overwhelmed by a team that came at them.
First off, Gesundheit, by the way. But yeah, we talked a lot about fast skaters and how that compares to playing fast. The Carolina Hurricanes put both on display, where they were playing fast and they're just a fast-paced team in general. And the Calgary Flames really struggled with that through the first 25 or 30 minutes of the game. At one point, the shot clock read 24-7 for Carolina. Like, Dan Vladar was under siege. And I think particularly actually in the second half of the game is when he really stood up and kept the Calgary Flames in. We talked a lot about the goaltending being able to keep the Calgary Flames in games. I didn't love a couple of rebounds, but I'm not a goalie expert, so I'm not going to sit here with a fine-tooth comb and go over, oh, he should have put this 3 feet to the right of where he did. But at the end of the day, he was the one who kept the Calgary Flames within one goal for a massive stretch of time, even though during that period it was the Calgary Flames carrying a lot of the play and then just having a breakdown or two. But I don't mind that game from a splits perspective. You don't love it for the first 30. The second 30, when they were down and they were facing a little in-game adversity, they responded, and they responded well.
The only problem I have with that, not because I agree, the only problem I have with buying too much into that is
sag from the other team?
Well, just the whole score effects thing, right? Like,
yeah.
The 3-goal lead is typically when a coaching staff lets the reins off and you know, is typically when you'll get a coach who says, okay, you're down by 3, you can green light. It goes from like passive green light to...
Oh, you mean that more from the Flames perspective, not the Carolina perspective.
And the Carolina perspective as well. I mean, you're up by 3. I think that's more of a mental thing where you're just like naturally, okay, now we got a 3-goal lead. And you know, like these are NHL players. They know what happens when a 3-goal lead happens. Like 2 goals is kind of still in striking distance. 3 goals is usually that threshold when the trailing team goes into chase mode where blue liners are activating way more and they're taking way more risks because they've been given the check mark to go do that, because you are chasing, you're already down by 3. And so the other team, while adjusting to that, they've got to kind of, there's adjustment that gets made on the other side, and sometimes that can swing the momentum. You know, Carolina's a team that plays with the lead a lot, and so deals with that a lot and is pretty used to it. But I do think that plays into why things swung so much after the third goal. And so it's, I agree that the Flames got to their game and started to swing it a little bit better, but I always have trouble buying too much into swings like that in circumstances like that because of the way a game changes sometimes.
Well, how I want to connect that is, are they able to carry that momentum into the game against the Winnipeg Jets? And it's not the same team. It's not the same style of team. It's not the same day. There's, you know, 48 hours between puck drops on that. But how I'm going to measure this Calgary Flames team to a degree is when something doesn't go their way and then it starts, do they have to reset and try and find it again from puck drop the next game? Or are they able to take that flow, that energy, the vibes that they had that brought them to within one goal of tying it against the Carolina Hurricanes, and instead of having a half a game sag against the Winnipeg Jets like they did the Carolina Hurricanes, can they maintain that momentum going against the hottest team in the NHL on Saturday?
A few things that were that jumped off the page. I'm curious what lines look like Saturday night. They won't do a morning skate before the Jets game because it's an early 5 p.m.er. So if Sharon Govich is back, where would he slot? Don't know. He was on a fifth line at practice, so they're not showing any hands
with
there.
Hanzik and Coronado. So two guys that are still on IR. Well,
so Sharon Govich is still on IR too.
And, well, and the other guy on that line just happened to be assigned to the AHL. Yeah. So there is not one tip of the hand of Ryan Huska.
The only difference in the kind of top four lines Friday morning was Klapka, where Coronado was to start the game. So Rooney was still with Lomberg and Klapka there. Kirkland was still between Mantha and Huberdeau, even though they made that switch in the game against Carolina. And the Backlund line, the Kadri line, still the same. I did want to highlight the Kadri line. Massive positive for me. The only line that was going in the first period was the Kadri line with Kuzmenko and Pospisil back on the left. And then I thought that that line was the catalyst for the turnaround as well. And Ryan Huska was going to that line even more than usual. A couple of times, you know, got it a rotation and went back to the Kadri line because it was playing so well. So I thought the Kadri line, specifically knowing that Pospisil was back on the wing with him and Kuzmenko for the first time since last year, that was a really big positive to me because they picked up right where they left off and they were such an impactful line down the stretch last year too.
Yeah, I'd agree that they were Calgary's best line, and you had Pospisil being the first in on the forecheck and disrupting a little bit. Kadri was Kadri. And on several shifts, different shifts, the puck protection from Andre Kuzmenko against the Carolina Hurricanes was absolutely ridiculous. And it's going to be a live by the sword, die by the sword sort of situation, because there are going to be opportunities and chances that are thwarted by the defense that force a what will look like a bad turnover by Kuzmenko. But the sheer fact that he's able to hold on to the puck as long as he can in the neutral zone, in the offensive zone, is uncanny. So that trio is something I'd hope to see again against the Winnipeg Jets to see what they can build on, because as you mentioned and as I agree, I think it was Calgary's best trio.
Before we hit the text line, last thing I'll say, they got to get Huberdeau and Mantha going again.
Yeah.
And I don't know how. You know, they tried Kirkland there, and we'll see if they do that again. Maybe, like, do you put Sharon Govich there? If 17's ready to return, do you put Sharon Govich? You know how I'm not a big fan of Sharon Govich in the middle, but do you put Sharon Govich there, drop Kirkland back to the fourth line with Lomberg and Klapka, and see if Sharon Govich and Huberdeau can get a little something-something going again? Like, maybe you think about doing that. Huberdeau and Mantha's game has dropped. I thought Huberdeau's best game and Mantha's best game were both in the Battle of Alberta at Rogers Place. And since that time, even though there's been a little bit of offense, Huberdeau scored the 3-2 goal against Carolina. It just, their overall game has dropped off. Both of them were so good in the first three games. How do you get those guys back there? That's another thing that I'm really curious about as they move into this tough stretch.
Well, as you mentioned, Huberdeau did score against Carolina, but he's only got 1 point in the past three games being that goal. Anthony Mantha does not have a registered shot on goal in the past three. You need those two going again, like they were in the opening three 100%. Games of the season.
Text line 960-960. First on the bigger picture stuff. This says, I wish they'd put Zeri at center with Huberdeau and Mantha, and they may yet at some point. This says, great start, but a loss in Seattle. You guys spent 2 days saying how bad Pittsburgh is, and then they barely beat them. Now another loss to Carolina. Still a good start and a hardworking team. Fun to watch, but they will come back to expectations now. And we'll see. I don't know if that is going to be the case, but that's why I'm so interested about this stretch, because they've got some good opponents ahead of them. And I think that that gives us even more of an indication of kind of what level this team is really at, and how, because I don't think that hard work is going away anytime soon. So how does it translate as we get, you know, deeper and deeper into October and into November?
Well, and that's what's so curious about this run of games going. If you want to go back to Pittsburgh or even Seattle, you can go all the way back to Chicago, where it was the third and four nights. Then they get a break. Seattle plays a disjointed game. Calgary at times can play a disjointed game. So that was a tough game. They still find a way to get a point. They rally against Pittsburgh. I don't think we called Pittsburgh awful. I recall saying they don't scare me as much as they used to do, which I think is a fair claim for a team that hasn't made the playoffs.
They
were,
you know what they are?
They are seasons.
Awful defensively, like straight up horrendous defensively. I'll come right out and say that.
There you are. And then you get Carolina.
I've never seen Crosby. If anybody suggests Sidney Crosby should be a Selke Trophy finalist after watching him against Calgary.
How dare you?
Sidney Crosby's the greatest player of this generation, but he struggled big time defensively. And I don't even think it's on him. I just think the way Pittsburgh is playing right now,
it might be a structure
thing.
Yeah,
it might be a structure thing.
Then you get Carolina, you get the, again, league leader in Winnipeg, Vegas. Like, this is going to be a telling stretch of hockey for the Calgary Flames, I feel.
Then on Coronado, this says, while logically I understand the Coronado move, I do worry about losing the player's loyalty when it comes for comes time for a contract renewal. This from Daryl, who says, to be honest, Coronado looked invisible the last couple of times I've seen them play. Last couple of games, but looking at centers and what they should go out and find, I don't know why they don't go knocking on Columbus's door and see what Monahan's worth is. Well, Monahan just signed there, so I don't know if that is happening anytime soon. This reads, boys, while I understand that Matthew Coronado needs to play meaningful hockey, I feel like he's been used as a sacrificial lamb because he doesn't need waivers. I just hope that it won't come back and bite them in the butt when contract talks arrive. And I do think part of this is the fact that he is waiver eligible, or not waiver eligible, rather, and that makes the decision. It does swing decisions, especially when they're temporary. Like, when it was about a year ago that the Flames sent Coronado to the American League as well, that one felt more permanent. This, I don't feel, is going to be as permanent. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, next week we see Coronado back in the NHL if something happens. This feels like a, hey, we're in a roster spot right now, and we need to make a decision. And so, yes, in this instance, I do think Coronado's waiver exemption hurts him. But I just feel like this is far more temporary, him going down, getting some playing time. I think we're still going to see a good chunk of Coronado in the NHL this year.
Well, especially if that's the messaging, I don't think you lose the player. You go to a 21-year-old and say, hey, we know you'd rather be in the NHL. We know you'd rather be getting the paycheck you get when you're in the NHL, but we want to temporarily put you down here, use you in every single situation, use you for 20-plus minutes a night, and there will be another opportunity for you upcoming. We don't know exactly when. And again, you can't predict the nature of injuries. You can't predict the nature of wanting to shake up a lineup because you're not seeing something, or perhaps you're seeing something you don't like. You can't give him a definite timeline. But what you can do is control the messaging of, hey, we're not doing this because we think that you're an American League level player. We're doing this because we want you to have the minutes, right, so that when you do come back, you're in a better spot to succeed.
It's Steinberg and Vickers this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. Wilsey, we talked a little bit about it this hour already, but now some time to go a little more in-depth on it, as the Flames have sent Matt Coronado to the Calgary Wranglers, and he'll report to the American League for the time being. What's our reaction to Matt Coronado being sent to the AHL?
I mean, a little bit surprised, but I suspect it is probably a good sign for one of, maybe both of, Yegor Sharangovich and Sam Honzek, who skated again with the team on Friday. So I think they're probably pretty close to returning, and that would necessitate a roster move, and Matt Coronato going down might explain that. And the reason I say a little bit surprised is because he's 21 and he needs to play. So if you don't think he's going to play, then you should send him down, get him some more time in the American League. It's not going to hurt him. But with that said, he did get bumped up in last night's game against the Hurricanes. The Flames, I don't think we're in love with the way that Anthony Mantha was playing. So, you know, he got bumped up. But when you take a look at what he did last night, played just over 10 minutes and had a team high 3 giveaways. And the Hurricanes are obviously a very high-pressure team. They play that man-on-man style and trying to force you into making mistakes. And he had a few turnovers, and you got to try to manage the puck a little bit better, not only Matt Coronato, but the Flames as a whole, which I thought they did for the most part in the second and third periods, not so much for most of the first period. So, you know, he's a young player who is still developing. He's accomplished quite a bit at the AHL level, but again, getting him a bit more time with the Wranglers, I don't think is going to hurt him. The most important thing, though, guys, I think he's got to play. So if it's not going to be with the Flames, then I think the right decision is to send him down.
Yeah, I agree. The emphasis would be on Matt Coronato's development and how much is he going to be able to do that at the NHL level. If he's playing fourth line minutes and every second game in sort of a rotation or a platoon with Adam Klapka. And I could understand fans looking at the situation and going, well, he hasn't played his way off the team, which I believe he hasn't. And you've got a number eight defenseman in Joel Hanley, for example. Why not waive him and make the space that way? Well, that doesn't cure the Coronato conundrum of how are you going to get him ice time and how are you going to get him consistent games in. I don't feel like this is going to be a permanent solution for Matt Coronato and the Calgary Flames. I'm sure we'll see him back at some point, more so than what we did last year when he was demoted, I believe, on November 1st last season. But he needs to play. He needs to play in all situations. He needs to play 20-ish minutes a night. And by doing that with the Calgary Wranglers, where you're still in the same city, you're still in the same building, it just makes sense from a developmental standpoint to have a 21-year-old playing regularly and in high-leverage situations versus minimal minutes every second or third game at the NHL level for me.
Yeah, guys, I do feel like this assignment this time around, almost like exactly a year later from when he got assigned last year, I do feel like this one is more, or is going to be more, temporary. It does not feel like this one is going to last 4 months, which is kind of what the last one last year looked like. Because I actually, this to me is a numbers game thing. This to me is, I think, the organization and Craig Conroy seeing that, okay, with Sharangovich and or Honzek ready to return. And, you know, the Honzek conversation is really interesting too. Like, does he come right back to the NHL, or do they think about sending him to the American League? But, you know, that's maybe a conversation for another time, at least until we find out which player's coming back for Saturday against Winnipeg, if one of those guys comes back for Saturday against Winnipeg. I digress. For me, I think this one feels a little bit more temporary. And I also feel like that Coronato is kind of getting hurt because of his waiver exemption and a numbers game. And so for a lot of Flames fans, I can understand that is frustrating. But if you're Craig Conroy and you say, okay, well, another player is coming back, Coronato likely going to be bumped back into that kind of rotating fourth line role with Klapka, what's better, him rotating on a fourth line role with Klapka? As much as Klapka, Kirkland, and Lomberg had been playing really well, Coronato, Lomberg, and Kirkland had been playing really well, you're like, do we want him in that fourth line platoon role, or do we want him playing big minutes in the American League? And I think that's why, if you're management, you say, okay, well, if he's going to be moved down the depth chart, maybe let's get him some big time, as Vic said, high leverage minutes in the American League for the time being, which I understand. I also understand, and much like Connor Zary a year ago when he got sent down after training camp, I almost hope, and I wouldn't blame Coronato in the slightest if he goes down for the first time really upset about this, because I think Coronato has shown me in the 5 games he's played that, hey, he can hang in this league, and I don't think the league is any more too much for him, at least from what I've seen. You go take a look at some of his metrics, guys, at 5-on-5. over at our friend's Natural Stat Trick. His individual expected goals per 60 minutes is fourth at 0.99. His individual scoring chances per 63rd on the team, and his individual high dangers per 63rd on the team. Like, the ice time that he's been given at 5-on-5, I think he's made the most of it. But that, and so I think if you're him, you're saying, I feel like I've proven that I can stay here. So now you're frustrated because you're being a victim potentially of a numbers game, and the organization wants you playing bigger minutes. I hope he goes down there. I hope that he's upset. I hope that he's like, I'm going to prove you guys wrong, because that's what you want as an organization. Like, these are tough decisions that are made by every organization in the NHL, and you want guys to respond the right way and then make it so that, hey, okay, we got to bring him back up, and we've got the first opportunity we've got, we got to get him playing in the NHL again. So I think that's what the desired outcome here would be. And I think the main thing when it's all said and done, gents, is he needs to play. And he's better off at the age of 21. And that's the really, that's the last thing that I'd say. We keep forgetting he's 21. And Adam Klapka's 24. And I think Adam Klapka is better suited to be in a fourth line platoon role where maybe he's press box, maybe he's in. He's better suited, because I think that is maybe closer to what he is if he's a full-time NHLer for the rest of his career. And he's not 21 and has gotten a little bit more professional experience than Coronado. So the main message here to me is Matt needs to play, and he's going to play for the time being much more in the American League.
Yeah, and we know he has an NHL shot, and he has 2 goals in 5 games this season, which over 82 is a 33-goal pace. And I do think that Matt Coronado will be a 20-goal scorer, probably a multiple 20-goal scorer in this league, probably sooner rather than later. But it's tough to score 20 or to do what you're best at when you're playing in a fourth-line role, and even harder when you're in a fourth-line platoon role, as he has been for most of the season with Adam Klapka. So I do think sending him down short-term will hurt Matt Coronado, like his feelings, but long-term it could help him. And I remember when the Red Wings made the playoffs a quarter century straight, Ken Holland talked about the fact that they would overcook players in the AHL with the Grand Rapids Griffins. And quite often, they would call them up a lot later than other organizations would recall their prospects. But when they did call them up, they rarely sent them back. So this could be a case where maybe this is Matt Coronado's last stint in the AHL. And Pat, I agree wholeheartedly when you say that Adam Klapka is more of a prototypical fourth line player than Matt Coronado. The problem for Coronado right now, well, two problems. Number one, you talked about the numbers game. If you've got Sharon Govich and or Hanzak coming back, you've got to open up a spot or two, and they don't have to put him on waivers, so he's an easier guy to send down. The other thing is, I think he's a better fit to play somewhere in your top nine, and they just don't have a spot on the wing in their top nine right now. So I know it probably sucks for Matt Coronado, but I suspect he'll be angry, go down there and play well, and earn a recall sooner rather than later.
Wilsey, I just want to pick up on the hurt feelings thing that you mentioned there. I hope he does have hurt feelings. I hope he's pissed off. I hope he's grumpy, angry, upset, whatever phrase you want to use, as long as he uses it and channels it the right direction. We've heard Ryan Huska a couple times this season talk about when Connor Zary got sent down last season, and he was quite upset about it. What did he do? He went and lit the AHL on fire, eventually got a recall, and never looked back. So hopefully Matt Coronado can do a similar thing where he goes down, he is angry, he is upset, but channels that into positivity on the ice to put himself into a position, like you mentioned, to never go back again.
Yeah, and even go look at, I'll just quickly say and then jump right back in, but even go look at what Jacob Pelche has done in the American League. He's gone down, and he was not happy about being sent down, and has gone down and be like, okay, and has used it the right way, and that's kind of what you're hoping for, because I'm with Vix, Wilsey, that like I hope that Coronado's pissed off on this one, and I hope that he uses that for a little bit more fuel to get himself back to the highest level as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I suspect that he will. The one thing I would add is he's really worked on his skating, and you can tell it is vastly improved. Mm-hmm. But go down to the Wranglers and just keep working on playing with pace consistently. And he's not the only guy on this team that needs to continue to move their feet to be at their best. I think there are a bunch of Flames players who fall into that category. They're not the most fleet of foot team, but that doesn't mean that you can't move your feet and try to play with as much pace as possible. So go down, play with pace, do what you do, and that's put the puck in your opponent's net, and I suspect we'll probably see him sometime soon.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Wilsey, Vix, and yours truly,
Stein.
Steins. Guys, how did we? I'm not calling myself that. You don't get to
you
make up
nicknames.
Your own nicknames. Guys, how did we like Marty Pospisil back with Nazem Kadri and Andre Kuzmenko against Carolina on Thursday night?
I liked him better. I still think that there was some room for improvement, but the one thing that jumped out to me about Martin Pospisil being back on the wing on Thursday night was his speed jumped out to me. And it did at times when he was playing center, but he also looked like a player who was maybe overthinking it, which I guess should be expected when you move from one position to another and have some different responsibilities. And he did admit to me when I talked to him earlier in the week that at times he felt like he was thinking too much on the ice. And when you're playing against the team as quick as the Hurricanes, you don't have time to think. You just have to react. So I think playing on the wing puts him in a position to just use his great speed and his physicality and get in there on the forecheck and bang and crash. And that's the one thing that I thought really jumped out last night, was his speed was way more noticeable on the wing than at center. I don't think he played his best game against the Hurricanes. Not many Flames did, but you guys know I have not been maybe the biggest fan isn't the right way to put it, but I just loved Martin Pospisil so much in the wing last season. I almost had a hard time envisioning him being as effective at center. And at times he's done some really good things playing center ice, but more often than not, he's kind of left me wanting that old Martin Pospisil back. So we saw a little bit of that last night, and I do wonder what they do. If Sharon Govich is ready to come back, I wonder if they slide him in the top nine as one of their centermen and then leave Pospisil on the wing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an experiment that's over, but if it were up to me, which it's not, I'd press pause on it right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether or not that will be an experiment that's put on the back burner for the time being, but I saw glimpses against the Carolina Hurricanes from Martin Pospisil that reminded me of the Pospisil we saw last season, being first on the forecheck. Again, to your point, Wilsey, using his speed perhaps a little more, I don't want to say effectively, but maybe perhaps a little bit more efficiently, and being reunited with Kuzmenko and Kadri. Well, we saw Kadri be Kadri, not that that's ever a question. We saw Sharon Govich, to me, looked a little bit more comfortable with the time and space he had with the puck. And then, of course, we had Pospisil being first in on the forecheck, being a little bit of a disruptor, and giving that line, giving that combination of Kuzmenko and Kadri perhaps a little bit more time and space. That group led the Flames in expected goals at 52.7% over at Money Puck, led in shot attempts at 18, and led on 5-on-5 ice time at 12:38. So a bunch of the underlying metrics also sort of back up the eye test there.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought that I loved it. I thought that that line was the catalyst for them getting back in the game. It was the only line going in the first period, and then it was the line that I thought really started to turn the tide once Carolina took that 3-rip lead, and then the backline line kind of got on board and started playing really well as well. And, you know, when it's all said and done, the 18 shot attempts, as Vix mentioned, high expected goals compared to the rest of the team. I thought that they were by far the best line. If you go over natural stat trick last night, the Kadri line was up over 57% on expected goals at 5-on-5. None of the other lines were even in the black. They were all in the red. The backline line was next at a little under 22%. So I don't think it's coincidence that line played as well as they did with Pospisil back there. It was like instant refound chemistry from the final 20 games or whatever it was last year, where I thought Kadri, Pospisil, Kuzmenko, you're like, geez, that's a line that you can almost know you're going to have success with for next season. They haven't started like that because, Wilsey, to your point, they wanted to try the experiment with Pospisil at center, but I think in the back of the coaching staff's mind, they always have that in their back pocket. We can go back to that and expect them to be good, and that's exactly what we saw. So I loved Pospisil back with them. I think there's more in Pospisil's game that we can see, but just as a trio, I thought having Martin back on the left side with Kadri and Kuzmenko was a really good fit. And yeah, I'm with you. I would not be making a change on that line going into the Jets game on Saturday. That's for sure.
No, me either, especially if Yegor Sharangovich is ready to come back. And maybe the Martin Pospisil at center experiment would have been paused sooner if Sharangovich had been available. But they kind of needed Pospisil at center because they didn't have another natural guy to play up the middle in their top nine. And you know, Justin Kirkland's emergence gave them the flexibility to do that against the Hurricanes, but I'm not sure that's going to be a long-term fit either. So we'll see what happens, but I liked him on the wing last season. I liked him on the wing again in his return to that position on Thursday night. And if they've got someone else who they feel comfortable playing in the top nine at center, then I would probably leave Pospisil there for the time being, because you're right. There is definitely some chemistry, and I think there's definitely a fit for him in a line with Kadri and Kuzmenko. So after watching those three together last night, even when the Flames were struggling early in the game, that was the one line
for sure
that was still kind of going. And then every opportunity Ryan Huska had to put Nazem Kadri, Andrei Kuzmenko, and Martin Pospisil on the ice, whether it be on an icing call against the Hurricanes, or if he had a chance to change on the fly and get a good matchup, he was doing that. So clearly the head coach liked that line. So I'd be pretty surprised to see them broke it up going into a big game against the Jets on Saturday.
The only thing that makes me wonder is just that was the line that Ryan Huska really wanted to see clearly going into the season before Yegor got hurt in the final preseason game. So I wonder how much pull there is to, hey, because they really brainstormed and researched and dug in on those line combinations. They really wanted Zeri on the backline line. They really wanted to try Pospisil at center, and they really wanted Sharangovich with Kadri and Kuzmenko. I wonder how much of a pull there is there for the coaching staff. Maybe not immediately, but at some point down the line to try Sharangovich there. So that's another curious one. I'm quite interested to see line rushes and warm up on Saturday. That's for sure.
I think part of the pull, and Aaron, you saw him play at the World Championships, part of the pull was they wanted to get a longer look at Martin Pospisil at center, right? And they didn't really have much time to experiment with that during the preseason. And when they did, it was against rosters that were not NHL caliber.
And then Sharangovich got hurt too.
Right, and he gets hurt in the final preseason game, so it kind of takes that option away. So we'll see. They had a chance to take a look at how Martin Pospisil plays up the middle. And they moved away from that last night. And with Yegor Sharangovich getting closer to a return, I wonder if he returns to playing center ice. And again, outside of faceoffs, I liked him playing up the middle last season. But that's been a big Achilles heel for the team this season. So whoever plays at center is going to have to start winning more faceoffs. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a real interesting next few games for the Flames. A tough stretch has already begun. Started with Carolina on Thursday, and now the 7-for-7 Winnipeg Jets on Saturday. Going to be real interesting to see how this next week or so goes for the Flames. Thank you, Wilsey. We will see you Saturday at the Dome.
Okay, have a great weekend, everybody.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport, as we start to wrap things up on this hour of Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Connor Gronsdahl, and Azam Ali Nanji, our producers this hour. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Yes, Flames and Jets. Note the start time Saturday night. It's a 5:00 face-off, 4:00 warm-up here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at calgarylockandsafe.com.